Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU.
This week, the new certification for respectful AI companies. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
On this week's show, the new certification for generative AI companies that get permission before training their models on copyrighted content, redundancies at Pitchfork, and more. But first, Chris, tell me something that stood out for you in the music business this week.
Well, it stood out for me, and I'm sure it stood out for everyone else as well. I moderated a panel at the Eurosonic conference in Groningen, and it was a very interesting panel, and Andy is now going to try and not sound sarcastic about
this. No, I'm very interested.
It was genuinely interesting because obviously lots of conferences, lots of panels. I present at lots of panels. But I mean, this is a topic that I don't think I've ever seen a panel on before. It is also informed by a white paper that we at CMU have been involved in with a company called Fixer. And it's basically about how the music industry's collecting societies report to artists and songwriters and record labels to music publishers. Because obviously, in a whole bunch of scenarios where music is used, the collecting societies, or CMOs, if you prefer, collect the money and then pass it back to the rights holders and to the music makers. But what information do they provide about how the money has been calculated, what it relates to? And so as part of this study, CMU and Fixer, we looked at all the different ways that CMOs around Europe report. And what we found is that the way that CMOs report varies hugely, both in terms of reporting that's really good and reporting that's really not very good. And actually, if you go around the CMOs around Europe, you'll find that, that CMO does something really good that nobody else does. And so does that one. And so does that one. And I guess part of the conversation was, could we not get all the good stuff that everybody does? Because clearly it's possible if one CMO is doing it and everybody do it. And I guess the main output was more standardization. Maybe that's inevitable, but there seems to be basically no standardization when it comes to how CMOs report. So if you are a manager, we had a manager on the panel, so she manages a number of artists and therefore is interacting with multiple CMOs in different countries for different clients, so having to deal with different portals, and every CMO reports differently. And so it's really hard. She was saying, for example, if she knows that her band has been on tour and she's trying to figure out whether or not the money has come through on the, you know, performing rights side, it can be really hard to figure that out. So basically, that was the conversation. It was very interesting. We will have a write-up of it in CMU coming up. Plus, you can download this white paper that we published alongside it. I am sure that Andy Malt, who has been super interested in everything I've just said, is going to provide you with a link in the show notes. Are you going to do that?
I was really interested.
Good.
You know, despite, you know, my heart sinks when you do say, I did a panel that you can't now see. But that actually was really interesting.
Well, this is a panel, even though you've all missed it, assuming you weren't there, you can read the white paper and there will be a report. So it isn't me telling you that you missed something and now you can't see it. FYI, I am still in Groningen at Eurosonic. And this year I've been staying on a boat. So I'm recording the podcast from a boat. And what I discovered this morning when I started to set up is, I think there must be a generator on this boat that powers it. So there's a humming generator in the background. So as a result of that, also, there's a constant sound of water because the boat's on a canal in Groningen. But as a result, I have come into my walk-in wardrobe. My room has a walk-in wardrobe. How impressive is that? Maybe I'll take a photo when I finish so you can all enjoy.
Yeah.
So I've turned the walk-in wardrobe into a studio. So whether or not that will result in you not being able to hear the generator and the flowing water in the background, who knows? We will only know once the final edit of this has been published. But if there's a generator in the background, water in the background, or if it sounds like I'm in a walk-in wardrobe, well, it's because I am. But hey.
Well, good when you're boarded by pirates because they won't be able to find you as well.
That's true.
That's good. We'll keep recording while that's happening.
The one thing about when you're staying on a boat is, you know how in hotel rooms you have the clean my room, do not disturb sign that you can hang on the door.
Yeah.
There's another sign which is evacuated. So presumably if we have to abandon ship, bearing in mind this is a boat parked in a canal, if we have to abandon ship, somebody, as we evacuate, must put the evacuated sign on every door. But fingers crossed, I will not have to abandon ship and evacuate in the next 25 minutes. Let's hopefully get this podcast recorded before that happens. So we ought to get on with our main story this week, I guess.
Yeah, because later on, we'll be talking through some more of this week's other most interesting music industry stories, including the UK's Council of Music Makers' plea to staff of major music companies to help tackle issues currently facing artists. But first, Ed Newton Rex, who you may remember as the former VP of audio at Stability AI, who resigned over the company's position on fair use, has launched Fairly Trained, which is a new initiative that will certify generative AI companies that have training data practices that respect creators' rights. The scheme has the backing of a number of copyright owners already, including the music companies Universal Music and Concord.
Yes. So as you know, because we've talked about it before on Setlist and we've written about it an awful lot in the CMU Daily, there is an ever-growing dispute between the tech sector and the copyright industries, obviously the music industry being one of those copyright industries, and the dispute is over the copyright obligations of AI companies. So the music industry, for example, is adamant that if a company trains a generative AI model using existing music, existing songs and recordings, then before they do that, they must go and get permission from the relevant copyright owners, and obviously that would require negotiating a licensing deal and paying some money. However, as you all surely know, many tech companies argue that actually AI training is covered by copyright exceptions in at least some countries around the world, or when we're looking at this from the context of American law, and obviously a lot of these companies are based in the US and that's what they do, they argue that training a generative AI model of existing content constitutes so-called fair use under American law, which would mean if there was an exception or if there was fair use, no permission is required. And so that is the position taken by a lot of technology and AI companies, including Stability AI, where Ed Newton Rex used to work, even though the music tool that Stability AI has developed and which it launched last year was actually trained using exclusively licensed music. So even though it is licensing some content to train some of its AI models, the official position of Stability AI, like most other tech companies, is this is fair use. We might choose to negotiate a license, but we don't have to.
Yeah, and this dispute is now subject to litigation, especially in the US, where a number of AI companies have been sued by copyright owners. Most of those lawsuits have been filed by authors, journalists, news organizations, and image libraries. The New York Times has sued OpenAI, and Getty Images has sued Stability. There is one music case with a whole load of music publishers suing Anthropic, which is an AI company backed by Amazon and Google. And there's been a whole load of lobbying on this matter as well. So in the UK, the government at one point proposed introducing a new data mining exception in copyright law to benefit AI companies. And that resulted in a massive backlash from copyright owners, including those in the music industry. And those proposals were then dropped. And then earlier this month, the government confirmed to Parliament's Culture Select Committee that that plan is definitely off the table. That said, we do know that the UK government is under considerable pressure from the tech companies to provide AI companies with more flexibility when it comes to copyright obligations. The general line on that being that if you don't, all the AI companies will end up operating from other countries and the UK economy will miss out on all of the cash that's going to flow in.
Yeah, trying to exploit UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's ambition for the UK to be a centre of AI, and they're basically saying, if you don't give us some flexibility in copyright law, that ain't going to happen. That's what we know the tech companies and AI companies are saying here in the UK. Meanwhile, back in the US, there have been plenty of statements from AI companies insisting that training an AI model is definitely fair use. And of course, plenty of statements from copyright owners, including music companies and organizations, saying it definitely isn't. Last year, the US Copyright Office instigated an inquiry and a consultation on all of this, and everybody submitted their statements. We reported on that in the CMU Daily. When I asked ChatGPT what it thought about this debate, it didn't seem so sure. So do you want to know what ChatGPT said when I asked the nice simple question, is training a generative AI model with existing content fair use?
Of course I do.
ChatGPT responded, I am not a lawyer. I'm not sure I was suggesting that ChatGPT was a lawyer, but anyway, good to have it clarified. You know, anyone listening, I'm not a lawyer, Andy's not a lawyer, ChatGPT not a lawyer, but it not went yet. On. Not yet. Well, I've got a law degree, so I'm one step closer to being a lawyer than either you are. Well, I don't know. Maybe ChatGPT has got a law degree. Anyway, the point is ChatGPT is not a lawyer, but it went on. He, she, they, it. Anyway, it went on. I can provide some general information. Whether training a generative AI model with copyright protected work qualifies as fair use is a complex legal question and can depend on various factors. In some cases, it went on, using copyrighted material for training purposes might be considered transformative, which could strengthen a fair use argument. I think the music industry would disagree with ChatGPT on that, but whatever. However, this is a nuanced legal issue, and the specific details of how the training data is used and the nature of the copyrighted works involved will be essential factors in determining whether fair use applies. So that's what ChatGPT has to say on this ongoing, long-running, increasingly tetchy dispute.
But despite all the ongoing litigation and lobbying, there are actually a number of generative AI companies that do exclusively train their models on licensed data. And those companies, as far as most creators and copyright owners are concerned, are the good guys. But how do we know who those companies are? Well, that brings us back to Fairly Trained. So a blog post launching this scheme said, "There is a divide emerging between two types of generative AI companies, those who get the consent of training data providers and those who don't. However, as I just said, right now it's hard to tell which AI companies take which approach. Fairly Trained aims to change that by offering a number of certifications. Now, initially it's going to offer one, which is called the Licensed Model Certification, which it says can be awarded to any generative AI model that doesn't use any copyrighted work without a license. At launch, 9 AI companies have been awarded that mark, covering image, music, and singing voice generation. They are, if you're wondering, Beethoven.ai, Boomi, Bria AI, Endel, LifeScore, Rightsify, Soms.ai, Soundful, and Tuny. Those are some stupid names.
Do you think they got ChatGPT to come up with their names? I'm sure ChatGPT would have done better than that, surely. Now, this blog post from Fairly Trained also sets out some of the initiative's future objectives and ambitions, and says that while this initial certificate that it'll be issuing is actually pretty basic, other new certificates will be developed down the line which deal with some of the complexities. So, for example, the blog post said a future certificate could address more nuanced questions about dataset acquisition, such as opt-in versus opt-out. So there is some future developments to come, but I think a lot of people in the music community and the music industry will welcome this development and this initiative, putting the spotlight on this issue, but also sort of celebrating those AI companies that are going for the approach of licensing data consistently and exclusively rather than sometimes or always relying on copyright exceptions or fair use. And as we said, Universal Music, Concord, amongst the music companies to formally state their support of this initiative. Obviously, within the music community, we've reported on this a lot in CMU. We've probably talked about it before on Setlist. There is both agreement and disagreement within the wider music community on all of this, in that when it comes to the obligations of AI companies to get permission to use copyright protected content, I think artists, songwriters, record labels, music publishers, they all agree on that. However, the disagreement in the music community is whether or not record labels and music publishers, when they own the copyright in the music that they release and publish, can they grant permission to AI companies and negotiate licensing deals without getting the specific permission from the artists and songwriters involved in writing and recording and performing the music? And the music maker community, particularly in the UK, has been quite vocal in recent months in saying not only should AI companies be getting permission, but record companies and music publishers, even if they own the copyright in the music, they should also be seeking permission from the artists and songwriters before allowing the music that they control to be used. And so I suspect within the music community, the artist and songwriter community, the question might be raised, well, can we have another kind of certificate for rights holders, for record labels? And I guess this would apply in the movie industry and the TV industry as well, where the sort of corporate rights holders are certified to say, not only do we want AI companies to get permission, we will get permission too. And I guess given that the ultimate aim of this new initiative is to champion AI models and platforms that truly, and we quote, respect creators' rights, I think the artists and songwriters would use that statement of intent to say, well, the creator's rights means the rights of artists and songwriters, whether those are legal rights or moral rights, and therefore the record companies and music publishers should be looking to get certification as well. But a very interesting initiative. Do go and check it out. We'll put the relevant links in the show notes, and it will be interesting to see how this develops.
Coming up later, the news that Pitchfork is being merged with men's magazine GQ. But before that, we're going to quickly run through some other stories from the music industry this week, starting with the UK's Council of Music Makers, which has published its own memo responding to the New Year messages from the bosses of Universal and Warner that we discussed last week. The CMM spoke directly to the employees of the major music companies, urging them to help tackle issues around data, transparency, and remuneration.
Yeah, so if you are an employee of a major music company, we'll put a link to that in the show notes, given it was written for you. I don't know. Does that mean if you work for an independent music company, you're not allowed to read it? I suspect that you probably are. Who knows?
No.
Well, we'll put the link in there.
Do not.
Anyway, and rebellious employees of independent music companies can go and read it. Also this week, the UK's Intellectual Property Office announced that it is undertaking a consultation seeking opinions on when performance royalties generated in the UK should flow to foreign labels and performers. This is a complex issue, so we're not going to say any more about it, except that under the current system, under the way UK copyright law currently works, the rules around foreign labels and performers getting money when music is broadcast or played in public differ for labels and performers. And that's one of the things that they're going to be looking into. But if we get into any more on this, this will turn into a 6-hour podcast. So next story.
Moving to the live business, Recom UK, which is the largest operator of nightclubs in the UK, has called in the administrators as it faces an assortment of issues, including higher energy costs, minimum wage increases, and poor midweek trading.
Back in the record industry, Universal Music has confirmed it will be creating efficiencies in parts of its business to allow, and I quote, investment in future growth. That statement was issued after there were reports in Bloomberg that the major is planning to instigate a round of redundancies in the coming months that will affect hundreds of employees at the biggest record company in the world.
And returning to a story that I think we've discussed quite a lot on Setlist, certainly a long-running story, but the US Supreme Court has declined to consider Epic Games litigation over Apple's App Store rules. As a result, Apple has changed those rules to comply with an order from the Californian courts, although Epic says that the changes have been made in bad faith, and Spotify, which we all know, hates Apple's App Store rules just as much as Epic, said that the way Apple had chosen to comply with the court order was outrageous. Epic added that it will be taking the matter back to court, so not the end of this at all. But it is the end of this section of the podcast, and if you want to read any more about any of those stories, or indeed anything we discussed on this week's podcast, check out the show notes or go to completemusicupdate.com. And finally, on this edition of Setlist, magazine publisher Condé Nast has announced a restructure which will see Pitchfork merged into the division that produces men's magazine GQ, which will result in a number of job losses at the music title. And that includes editor-in-chief Pooja Patel, who took over from Pitchfork founder Ryan Schreiber in 2018.
So this merger was confirmed in a memo to staff from the publisher's chief content officer, Anna Winter, who said that the decision to bring the Pitchfork team into the GQ organisation had been made after a careful evaluation of Pitchfork's performance and is, we believe, she wrote, the best path forward for the brand so that our coverage of music can continue to thrive within the company. Both Pitchfork and GQ, she went on, have unique and valuable ways that they approach music journalism, and we are excited for the new possibilities together. However, she did also confirm in that memo that with these organisational changes, some of our Pitchfork colleagues will be leaving the company today.
Now, most music media has struggled over the last decade as they've faced increased competition for audience and advertisers from social media. Many have expanded their operations in a bid to secure other revenue streams, such as putting on events, and more recently launching membership products. And it's fair to say there's been mixed success with that. Some have done it very well, others, I guess it's fallen a bit flat. But the magazine sector more generally has also faced many of the same challenges. And late last year, Condé Nast CEO Roger Lynch said that the media firm would be cutting about 5% of its total workforce in a bid to reduce costs.
Yeah, so given that, as we know, magazines in general and the music media specifically have been struggling for many years now. And given that the boss of Condé Nast had said that there were going to be some redundancies early on in 2024, you might have thought that job cuts and the restructuring of Pitchfork would not have come as a surprise. Although a statement that was issued by the Pitchfork Union, which is allied to the News Guild of New York, actually revealed, once this memo had gone out, that they had been assured last month that the job cuts that Robert Lynch were talking about were not going to affect Pitchfork. So actually, the job cuts that arrived, I mean, I guess, and you could see this from some of the people who were affected and the comments that they said on social media. I mean, obviously, they are aware of the challenging industry in which they are operating, and that it did feel that at some point, probably, there would be some dramatic changes. But for the job cuts to come right now was actually quite a surprise for quite a few people who are impacted. And the union statement said that the memo from Anna Wintour this week shows just how untrustworthy Condé Nast management is. The reporters, editors, producers, researchers, and all the people who make award-winning journalism for Pitchfork deserved better than to be treated like disposable parts. So, yes, lots of criticism from the union there. Lots of articles and social media posts since this announcement came out, you know, expressing disappointment that this is happening. Our assumption obviously is, although Pitchfork is, as far as we can see, going to continue, it will have less coverage, less reviews, less journalism. And so lots of people, I mean, I did see some people, sort of music fans on social media saying, oh, well, these websites, I don't need them anymore. The journalism's not as good as it used to be. So there were some people being not that sympathetic. But I think within the music industry and within the music community and the music media, where although it's true that music magazines, music websites, they're not as important as they once were, because there's lots of other channels where people can discover and learn about music. But I think lots of artists, labels still recognize that, music websites, particularly, you know, big platforms like Pitchfork, have an important role to play. Lots of great people working there, lots of great journalism being published, and therefore it's really sad to see these things being reduced and taken down, even if, in a way, a lot of this has probably been inevitable for quite some time.
But that's all we've got time for on this week's setlist. We'll be back with another episode next week, and you can keep up with all the latest music industry news every day at completemusicupdate.com.